Hi there, this is Brent.
And this is Amanda.
We are the Unreliable Narrators.
Here to talk about the strangeness, the mystery, and the wonder of Gene Wolfe's prose.
What is time?
What is memory?
What is a person?
Is this reality?
Where are we?
Do we exist?
Have you ever considered that all your choices would have brought you right here to this very moment?
Episode number 13, Volksweapon. First published in the Mike Shane Mystery Magazine, September of 1967, and then later collected in Young Wolf.
Well, Amanda, I guess just so listeners are clear, I do have a confession to make.
Oh dear. What's your confession, Brent?
I'm not very fond of mystery stories.
Yeah, and Volksweapon is something of a mystery story. It starts off with a game warden investigating the death of a girl and the wounding of a young man. Parked apparently in what's Lover's Lane, and then there are a couple of hunters that appear, and everyone ends up back at the hospital, and the game warden solves the mystery via, I think, deductive reasoning, and it closes.
Yeah. I just wanted to say I wasn't a big fan of mysteries in case there's, one, I'm not the target audience, two, I may be missing something because I'm not as familiar with the tropes, and three, I might be a little jaded from, like, because it's not, mysteries aren't as enjoyable for me, but I do love Wolf, so I did like the story.
Right. Well, I think that the warning's probably good, because not every story is for every person, and this is certainly one of the least Wolfian Wolf stories I think I've read. So it's a mystery, which, without an obvious fantastical speculative fiction edge to it. And feels, for Wolf anyway, very straightforward.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I do have a question for you when we
get to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one thing, I looked to see if there's any related information in the Mike Shane Mystery Magazine. There's not. The only thing that's different with the story, there's two illustrations, which obviously had nothing to do with what Wolf had envisioned.
Some kind of generic illustration.
Yeah. And then there was an intro that the magazine added. It was just two lines. It said, "Who killed Judy? Only the dead girl knows."
Well, that seems wrong because the game warden figures it out.
Yeah. So there is some front matter in Young Wolf.
Yes. I like the note that is appended at the beginning of Young Wolf.
What part?
Well, it's basically just that Wolf grew up learning to shoot, and that he also served in the military, and he felt like a lot of writers didn't know what it was like to shoot a gun or what it was like to be in a fist fight. And I think that that is an extremely fair criticism of a lot of literature. Writers are supposed to write what they know. They don't realize necessarily that that means that they should be able to have handled the implements that they're describing. Fists or guns.
Yeah.
Have you ever handled a gun, Brent?
Yes. I've been hunting, so.
And have you ever been in a fist fight?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay, good to know.
It's been a while, though, so. Yeah, so there's sections in there that I can't remember which article I was reading, but when he was doing a story about knife fighting, he set up, like, silhouettes of people in the backyard and was throwing knives at the silhouettes.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, so he was boxing in Korea during the war with his fellow soldiers. So there's a section in The Land Across where the protagonist is literally talking about people shouldn't punch for bones. They need to punch for the, like, where the muscles are. And that's
right.
A mistake that they
the
make.
Soft parts.
Yeah. So the fact that he has this intro here, it spoke to me because there's a lot of times, too, when it's like people, writers, authors have guns in their stories. And the difference between a gun and a magic wand, a lot of times, it's not super clear.
Well, and I think that it's not just writing that kind of ignorance is restricted to. You've probably been in a pub conversation or at a backyard barbecue and someone starts pontificating about hunting or shooting or what they would do in some crisis situation, and you realize they don't have any idea how loud a gun is or what it feels like to hold and shoot one. And of course, the movies do a very good job of confusing reality.
Yeah.
So that silencer's really silence and that recoil is extremely minor and that, yeah, and that an unsilenced gun isn't so loud that it makes your ears ring.
I guess my last little comment here on the front matter is there's a comment somewhat later. As those of you who have read my previous book from United Mythologies know, I served in the infantry in Korea. And so I think I'm pretty sure that that's the book, Letters Home.
Right, the collection of letters he wrote to his mother.
Yeah. So that, I believe, is all the front matter here. This isn't a story that has been collected a lot or published a lot.
Right. So. And I think that that's probably related to what I said earlier, that it's not an extremely Wolfian story. It is much more a straightforward mystery story. So it starts out in the perspective of Wilt Smythe, the game warden, who heard a gunshot, it seems like, and runs down this road that leads toward the lake and finds a wounded man and a dead girl.
Smythe? In my head, I was saying Smith.
Well, that might be. I said Smythe in my head.
Okay.
So we can both be wrong.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's right. There's probably a third way.
Our buddy Wilt. Let's call him that.
Okay.
So our buddy Wilt goes to help this moon-faced young man and finds the dead girl and a Volkswagen that's been driven into the ditch.
So right off hand, we have the boy, moon-faced boy. He's never really named. So he is anonymous throughout. Mm-hmm. So, but this is somewhat of a wolf trick that he uses in his later works. If listeners buy into my theory about Rattler being Volkswagen front wheel drive, pick him up.
Yes. Yeah,
so this would be our second wolf story with a Volkswagen in it. And then this one is just I love the fact that our protagonist is a game warden.
Why do you love that?
Well, I was getting ready to say, I don't know if I've read very many stories where a game warden is in there as a hero or the protagonist. He is.
Do you think this has something to do with the nature of game wardens? Or do you think this has something to do with the nature of the way people respond to game wardens?
Probably with the way they respond to them.
Because okay.
We get a lot of detective fiction where it'll be a police officer or FBI agent or Interpol agent. Insert any number of
agents and officers.
Yeah, I think the Postal Service police or probably the... Now I know zero stories with the Postal Service police and one story with the game warden.
Yep, that sounds about right.
So he runs up and he finds the girl dead. And right offhand, the boy asks, "Who are you?" "I'm the game warden. What went on here?"
Yeah, and the boy goes on to describe that some third person or another man came to the window of the Volkswagen the girl was driving and was trying to get in. And that man shot the boy. He's holding a wound in his abdomen and then killed the girl.
Yeah, and Wilt explains that he knows something happened because he heard the motor roaring as I came up. Take it easy. And then he's going to look and see if anybody's on the lake.
Right, so looking for this man that attacked them.
Or if anybody was at the cabin because he knows that those are areas that are down there.
Right, so he goes looking to see if he can find other people, either whoever the perpetrator was or potential witnesses that heard things.
Yeah. So, but he gets out there and he can see the lake is still, nobody's on it, and nobody's at any of the cabins. So, and he runs back up.
Yes, and that's probably a lot of running, but he then tells the boy to lie down in the car, and then the game warden's going to go out to the road to flag someone down to help them, because he's not going to be able to get the car out on his own. The boy's still wounded, the girl's dead.
Yeah. And then one somewhat of a key point right in there, too, is the moon-faced boy is claiming that he passed out.
Yeah, that this other man shot him and then he passed out from the bullet wound and then came to and the girl was dead and the man was gone.
So as Wilt is going back up the road, so we're just dropped into the initial, he comes upon this murder scene. And we're not really sure why he's out here. And then when he's going back up the road, I think this is the indication of why he's out here at night.
Yes, because there are two men walking and he hears their voices and almost immediately recognizes them as hunters.
Yeah. So, and there are hunters that he knows and they appear to be in some sort of cat and mouse game where he has suspicions that they are not being as exact with the game regulations as they should be.
And everyone should be exact with game regulations, right, Brent?
Yes, you should.
Yes. So he encounters these two men, and it's nighttime, which is, I don't know, maybe in other parts of the country, nighttime hunting is allowed. But hunting at night is not something that I was ever allowed to do.
Here in the West, it's not that common. They claim to be chasing coons. And the reason there's no dogs around is because the dogs were off. And so the story is they're looking for their dogs.
Right. The dogs went missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he demands that the two hunters help him. And he seems to be treating them as potential suspects in this murder case, as he's insisting, okay, you do this and you do that. No, you're coming in with me. Not only does he need their help to get the Volkswagen unstuck out of the ditch, but he insists that they come into town with him. And the way I read it, at least at first, is that they are potential suspects in this murder case, that it might have been one or the other of them that shot the boy and murdered the girl.
No, I agree with that assessment. And there's also two other things, I guess, that are sub-points off that. It's like he wants them out, but then also he's worried about a storm. There's a storm coming in.
Right.
And so he's trying to, well, later on, he says he's worried about the crime scene, but there's, so he's trying to, my reading was, is he was trying to get an analysis of everything as quick as possible because he's worried the storm's going to get rid of any evidence.
Yeah, so when they go back, he takes them back. They help him get the Volkswagen out of the ditch. And one of them finds a small gun. One of the hunters finds a small gun lying in the grass next to the dead girl.
In a pile of trash.
Yes. And it's described as no larger than a pack of cigarettes. And I believe it was 25, is that correct?
Yeah, 25.
A little 25, which are tiny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever fired one, but they're kind of hard to shoot because they're so small. Even though there's practically no recoil, they're hard to hold on to because they're so small. There's nothing to grip.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that they're, like, the little pile of trash there. Like, maybe I'll come back around to it. Like, the indication I was kind of getting is that I'm imagining, like, gum wrappers and maybe some foil or, like, the top of a bottle cap. Something that you would have emptied your pockets.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that. But I think that is at least the implication there. Yeah, so they kind of all awkwardly squeeze into the Volkswagen. One of the hunters in the front next to the game warden who drives, the boy curled up in the back seat, and the other hunter on the floor next to him.
Yeah, and the younger hunter, Martin, he starts explaining that he recognized the girl. It was somebody from in town. He didn't really know her, but she went to school, and he went to the college, and he'd seen her around. And
she was one of those college girls.
Yeah. And then there's a bit of a Wilt asks if, like, what they were doing. And then he starts laughing. And then the older hunter and Wilt both tell him to knock it off.
Right. The implication being that she wasn't exactly faithful to her marital vows, because they say that she was married to an Air Force officer who was stationed in Europe. And the boy, the wounded boy, is clearly not that officer.
And then it's here that Wilt starts kind of putting things together, and he's like, oh, the writing on the gun wasn't English.
Right.
And he's like, oh, if you came home on a military plane, you could bring whatever home with you, which I've heard plenty of stories of the stuff that people brought back after World War II from Germany and then, like,
Japan and then later from Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
So that part rang very true for me.
Very much so.
So they get back to the hospital.
Yes, and get the boy in to get medical care.
Yeah, and so that he's going to get a blood transfusion because the wound, kind of, it grazed some of his muscles. It didn't go in, but he was bleeding quite a bit. So, and then that's where we kind of have the two crimes wrapped up.
Yeah, in conversation between the warden and the hunters, we get the exposition.
Yeah. I like the fact that we have the murder, but then we also, like, Wilt is the reason I'm the game warden and the reason I'm out here is because of the first thing. So the situation that he was out there trying to catch poachers, like, he hasn't forgotten about that either. So
interesting. A murder and rape does not supersede his responsibility as a game warden. He's still paying attention to the fact that he was out there to catch poachers. Yeah. So shall we spoil the conclusion?
Yeah, I think we should.
All right, spoiler alert, in case you haven't read it yet. just as usual, will tell you everything that happened. Yeah, so he talks to the hunters and he basically says the police will be coming for the boy. And the hunters are shocked. Wait, you think he did it? And then Wilt goes on to explain that, well, yes, he does think he did it. He thinks that because the gun was hers, because it was from Europe and her husband was an Air Force officer who'd been stationed in Europe. So that's how she would have gotten the gun. There's no reasonable explanation for the boy to have a European 25.
No.
And then he describes the wounding and how it doesn't correspond to the boy's narrative. The boy says he got shot and that he passed out, but the wound is not severe enough to cause a loss of consciousness. And while he has had some blood loss, it's been slow over time. And there wasn't a sudden loss of blood that he would pass out from and then somehow recover from without help.
Yeah.
So he basically tells the hunters that he thinks that the boy did it. The boy raped her and then she shot him and then he got the gun from her and shot her. And then we solve the other unspoken mystery.
Yeah.
And then maybe this is where I'm underselling Wolf, because this is actually very Wolfian. In a way, the thing that we're worried about, the rape and murder, which is treated very seriously in the story, is not the whole story. There's a whole other crime that's been going on.
Yeah, and so he reaches into the older hunter's pocket, pulls out a
357 Derringer.
Yeah, 357 Derringer, and then starts talking about spotlighting the deer.
Yep.
And so then they get confused, and then you shoot them, because they kind of freeze, and then you shoot, because their eyes reflect. You have a target where you can walk up and shoot them close range.
Yes. And a 357 Derringer would be very close range.
Yes.
Having fired one, they're not accurate to more than...
What, quarter mile?
No. Maybe, what, I don't know, 15 feet?
If
your hands are steady. Derringers don't even usually have much in the way of sights on them. You're not aiming. You're just pointing. Yeah. And anything much beyond the end of your finger, you're just hoping.
So he's pickpocketed the weapon.
Yep.
And then he's like, well, yeah, they get in an argument and Wilt's like, yeah, it will be hard to prove this, but I'll go ahead and keep this and toss it out in the lake because it's going to be about the price of the fine anyway.
Right. And then the hunters basically are over a barrel because in order to get the 357 back, they would have to address the poaching charge, which they might be able to get away with, but would be difficult and time consuming. And if they failed, it would cost them as much as a new 357 Derringer would cost. Although I do kind of like the extremely dated pricing of, what is it, about $35 or $40 for a 357 Derringer.
Yeah. Of course, this is back when they're making, what, minimum wages?
What, 12 cents an hour?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what minimum wage was in the 50s, but...
Yeah, neither do I, but it would have been pretty low.
Well, don't ask me how I know, but in the early 1990s, you could get a 357 Derringer for about $350, $400.
Okay.
So that would be a correlative price in the 90s. I don't know what prices are today.
I don't. Maybe I should have looked that up. I didn't. So.
Probably just a tangent.
So there ends the short story, Volksweapon.
Yeah.
Well, oddly enough, we have a super competent protagonist.
Yes, a super competent game warden.
Yeah. And as far as I can tell from a reading, he's competent in that he's putting the pieces together and looking for clues. And he doesn't seem to have any huge blind spots. So, and that is, I can't think of any other wolf protagonists that are this competent. He's definitely up there with the least bumbling.
Most reliable of narrators?
Yes. I was avoiding that joke. But...
Oh, come on. You're just stepping around it so that I'll step into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's capable, he's competent, he's focused on his job, he's attentive to reality. He solves two mysteries in one night. I mean, the girl's still dead, but, and presumably there are dead deer out in the woods as well, but yeah, he does a good job.
So, what do you make of the meaning of the title, Volksweapon?
Oh dear, I don't know. I mean, I think it's European 25. I didn't do research on this, so now I realize I'm just going to be talking out of my butt, but that's okay. You'll allow me to get away with it. I'm assuming it would have been a German make pistol. Volkswagen
Volk's weapon. Just small, compact, portable, relatively inexpensive. It's the weapon of the people. And so God made man and Smith and Wesson made him equal. I didn't dig beyond that. It just seemed like the people's weapon.
Yeah. And that's where I landed there too. People's weapon. And I think it's a joke on Saturday Night Special. Like it's a cheap gun that only serves to make you more confident than you actually should be because it's probably not actually going to help you in a real situation.
Right. And this is where the people haven't really handled guns. Knowledge seems to come through because Wolf says that he's writing a story and he's writing it from the perspective that a lot of writers don't know what it is to fire a gun or what it is to get in a fist fight. But he has a character here who doesn't seem to have understood that while the gun might be helpful in certain circumstances, you might be able to use it as an agent of protection. You can't count on it to get you out of an extremely vulnerable situation. And so she was armed and prepared to fire, which is more than I think most people would be, firing a gun at a living creature, much less another human being. That's a big psychological hurdle. So while she had a deal of competence there, it wasn't enough for her to protect herself because she only succeeded in wounding her attacker and apparently enraging him further.
So there's one line I wanted to call attention to.
Which one's that?
He says, driving out here, but not for the reasons you might think. And that's the implication being that maybe they weren't out there for the...
The obvious canoodling?
Yes. But then I wasn't even sure what that could be alluding to. It's like, what is it, a drug deal? Is she a spy? Is he a spy? There's nothing else in the story that I saw that would...
provide a plausible alternative explanation.
Yeah. Did you see anything?
No, I didn't see anything. And I didn't come up with a plausible, what is a reason other than what I would think? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Is she a spy? Is it a drug deal? But then none of the events would bear that out. Is it a secret meeting with a lawyer to initiate divorce proceedings? Like, there's just no, whatever Wolf might have been signaling with that, I didn't see it borne out.
I didn't find anything either. So there is another question I had, and this is more a result of some further research I did. But what do you make of Wilt saying he'll drop the 357 into the lake?
Seems like a waste of a perfectly good Derringer.
Okay. So the reason I kind of ask that, when I was reading through, I noticed that there was some, I guess what you would call distancing language when we're in Wilt's perspective. I wasn't sure if it's because it's a law enforcement officer trying to be objective or if Wilt was distancing himself from the situation. And so a couple examples that stood out to me that then kind of got me down a rabbit hole. One, the fallen leaves on the dry soil held no footprints, not even the girl's or his own. So there's like a little bit of distancing there, like he can't see his footprints. And then this was lying right alongside her. It was mostly under some sticks and trash, but I'd seen it right away. And so this is when the younger hunter finds the gun. And then you think Marty or me did this, didn't you? The older hunter asked. You said no one came down the road. So Wilt saying you to the older hunter, you said no one came down the road. And there wasn't anyone in the summer cabins or out on the lake. And so you have a little bit of distancing language there where Wilt's not saying anything, but he's like, you said.
Right. And so he's not answering the question.
Yeah. And I should also mention there that I misspoke. Martin's the older hunter. Marty's the young man. So I think earlier when I was given that.
That's okay.
And then the last one that kind of caught my attention, you weren't her husband, were you, son? And that just kind of seems like a weird...
Weren't instead of aren't.
Yeah. So when I was like looking at this, and I should be clear here too, that I think that Wilt, he solved the poaching case and he solved the murder case. But reading into this, there are some interpretations on the Earth list where because of this distancing language, and people point out a number of other ones, Wilt is actually the murderer, and he's possibly even the husband, but because, and so his motives for getting them away from the crime scene are so the storm will remove evidence. And then the reason why he's asking questions is because he's trying to, it's like, oh, does the Moonface boy know who I am? Like, do the hunters know my relationship with her? And so, and then they read the dropping the Derringer into the lake as a, like, disposing of evidence. And they viewed that as a little bit cavalier for a law enforcement officer. I didn't find it that odd, but at the same time, like, growing up in the West, and this may be different, like, back in the Midwest or back East, as we like.
Anything east of the Rocky Mountains.
Yep. The relationship, or at least historically out here in the West, has been a little more, it's like a cat and mouse, but also like the game wardens will look the other way when, like, if they know somebody needs the food. I've heard stories of them looking the other way. I've heard stories of handicapped man literally shooting a deer on the wrong side of the road, and then the game warden coming and then helping him load the deer up. And then he gets home later when he's reading the regulations and he realizes he shot the deer in the wrong unit. And then because of that, he also shot, like, it didn't have the correct number of points on the antler.
Right. So violating several
rules. Yeah. But because he was handicapped, the game warden was like, his leg, one leg was much shorter. So it was hard for him to get around. So to me, this, like, kind of the, well, I think you did this, but I don't exactly have you on it, but I'm going to take your Derringer so you're not doing this. This just seemed normal.
Yeah, that didn't strike me as strange behavior on the game warden's part. It seemed very practical, call it relational law enforcement, where he's a part of the community and he's basically setting up a future where these poachers understand that he knows what they might do and he's going to treat them with some portion of moderation and prudence, not going full letter of the law, strong arm of the law on them, but acknowledging that there are margins and there are misunderstandings. So that part read very straightforward to me. And the 357 Derringer wasn't involved in the murder. So far as we can tell, it would make no sense for one of the hunters to have the 357 and have it be in any way involved in anything. So yeah. If he's disposing of it as a way of undermining any future testimony that the hunters might bring against him, I don't know. That just doesn't connect to me. So the distancing language, that just seemed like a officer going into a clinical, sort of very professional processing. I mean, if you or I stumbled across a dead body and a wounded man, we'd probably be a bit overwhelmed and probably less than perfectly logical because it's not the kind of thing that we have the training or the context for. By your 10th crisis situation, you probably have it a bit more figured out and are able to be clear, clinical.
Yeah, I can't really defend this interpretation, and I don't think it bears the scrutiny of the actual story.
And this is Young Wolf. So while some of the earlier stories do have a very strong hint of the complexities and layers of later Wolf, I think it's reasonable for a story written for a mystery magazine to not be as convoluted or mysterious or layered.
Yeah, I don't think I mentioned this part at the beginning, but when we're talking about a mystery magazine, this is a mystery magazine that was the size of like a mass market paperback, and it's very cheaply printed too. So I believe this was definitely maybe a step above Sir.
But right.
But I don't know how far of a step above Sir it was.
Right. Not a high paid, highbrow publication. Definitely more on the, yeah, just the pulp entertainment end of things.
Yeah. I think it was a right for pay type of.
Yeah.
He also published another short story. In
Mike Shane?
Yeah. And we'll probably get to that someday.
At some point.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts or questions?
I don't have any other questions for you. And I think I've summarized my thoughts. This is a very competent Wolf protagonist. I like the fact that he's a game warden. I'm not a big fan of mysteries, but I do like Wolf as an author.
Well, I'm happy he seems to have figured out the case against the murder rapist and also that the poachers are at least on notice.
Yeah.
The unreliable narrators are Amanda Patchen and Brent Towle. And, as Gene Wolfe said, there's a certain kind of lonely man who rejects love because he believes that anyone who offers it wouldn't be a lover worth having.